ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Nightlife. News breakdown.
Well, the federal opposition will be hoping that the leadership ructions of recent months are now over. New leader Angus Taylor and deputy leader Jane Hume are installed, heading the newly arranged shadow cabinet. And I guess they're hoping that they can calm the farm, so to speak, and focus on opposing the Albanese government rather than each other. But what are the new leader's priorities? The refresh off the front bench sees harder-edged Conservatives again to the fore, including Jacinta Namatjimpa-Price, Andrew Hastie and Sarah Henderson, and promotions for younger talent, including Tim Wilson and Claire Chandler, to the two most senior economic portfolios. Will it work? Is it what voters want, especially in city electorates, which were such a wasteland last election for the coalition? And will they welcome the harder right policies of yore from coalition revisited? And what about the internal review of the Liberal Party's disastrous 2025 election campaign, conducted by Nick Minchin and Prue Goward? I know, questions. The release of that review has been delayed after former leader Peter Dutton apparently threatened legal action, although getting hard news about all this is a bit difficult. But might it have some hard truths? Joining us for a Nightlife News Breakdown tonight is Emily Barrett, Managing Editor of the Saturday Paper. Emily, good evening to you. Welcome back.
Yeah, good evening to you too, Phil.
Your paper's special correspondent, Jason Katsoukas, has looked deeply into the new leadership team of the coalition and Angus Taylor's past. Well, yes, Angus Taylor does have skeletons in the cupboard, that's true. How did Jason perceive what's going on?
Well, yeah, he saw it through the lens, really, of this first speech that Angus Taylor gave to the party room. And look, there was genuine concern from within that room that he was catering so hard to the party's far right, really, that it lacked substance on sort of the more traditional liberal issues like lower taxes and, I guess you'd say, budget responsibility and deregulation and those sorts of things. So instead he, and this is the story that one of the people who spoke to Jason told, was that he was building up to this big, what turned out to be an homage to the Australian flag. And, you know, that source was pretty colourful in their frustration about it, because it was, you know, it seems as if in this way Taylor's drawing some inspiration from the Trump kind of playbook. You know, he's, you know, you remember how much the president draped himself in the stars and stripes. And so this seemed to be indicative of this kind of almost Americanization of the right, of the Liberal Party. And, you know, it's a reflection not just of how divided the party is, but of those newer forces that seem to be trying to kind of dominate its agenda. So we've seen that from the language that they've been using on immigration. Now, you know, he's saying in that story, the speech wasn't all about flags. It was obviously, you know, it included what they described as an interesting level of attention to childcare, which was, you know, as we know, that's a signature policy of the Albanese government. And Karen Barlow reported in a story actually at the same time that Susan Lee oversaw some work on a policy for childcare that was supposed to be released last year but was delayed by all the National Party upheaval. So, you know, if we look at the more traditional liberal concerns, we've got Tim Wilson, as you mentioned, as shadow treasurer. Mm. He's brought, you know, a lot of energy to the role. But he also gave Jim Chalmers a bit of a gift by sort of proposing that overhaul of the Reserve Bank, another one under a coalition government, that would sort of deprioritize the full employment part of its mandate, which would mean, if you're focusing only on inflation, that rates could rise a lot higher. So that wasn't very well received. So, you know, if you're looking at those more traditional things, you know, we've got also Jane Hume on employment. We'll see if she sort of goes back to any of those attempts on the work from home policy that went so badly in the last election. You know, hope that they've learned a few lessons from that. But yeah, there's definitely that sense of this kind of far right pull that you know, really led the party to drop that commitment to climate targets that also hasn't served them terribly well, you'd argue.
No. No, wrapping yourself in the flag gets you so far in politics, but probably not very far, I wouldn't have thought. What's the story about this report into this review of the coalition's election performance conducted by Nick Minchin and Prue Goward? I mean, is it true that Peter Dutton's threatening their legal action and stopping? Well, yeah, it's hard to get any accurate information about this, isn't it?
It is very hard, and I think there's been a lot of sort of tight lips particularly on the coalition side, obviously, about it. But it's there is a lot of frustration also within the ranks from this story that Jason was pursuing on the weekend, this is supposed to be the key to them helping to learn some of the lessons from the last election, You know, as if they didn't have the, sort of those keys handed in the prior election. And it's unclear whether it'll ever be made public in full. I mean, it's understood that there are no individuals who are actually identified by name in it, but apparently it's pretty unsparing in its assessment.
But you would think in the circumstances, I mean, things couldn't get worse at the moment. I mean, things are about the lowest they could be. You'd think, look, you know, put it out there, get it over with. It'll last a couple of weeks like most things do. In the media, and then we move on. This way, it's always, and of course, it will be leaked. You'd think in the end, won't it?
You'd think so, but this is the issue, right? For the time being, the party room's holding together over this idea that there's some renewal and some refreshment under Taylor. Now, Taylor doesn't apparently come off well in this review, because it focuses so much on the mistakes of, you know, the weak policy development, the lack of alignment with the liberal values. These are the sorts of things that Taylor, as a sort of a central architect of that election campaign, isn't going to fare well if they come out as publicly as a proper report release would suggest. So I think it might be some time before we do see it, because there's just some potential embarrassment involved.
All right. Anyway, meanwhile, the ISIS bride issue goes round and round. The newly refreshed opposition has latched onto this hard, and they're taking a very aggressive stance towards their repatriation, even though, of course, groups of these people have come back under the coalition government in the past. Angus Taylor says the government needs to be doing more to block the return of people from terror hotspots, and he's proposed a new criminal offence to punish those who assist in the repatriation of Australians with links to terror organisations or hotspots.
This government is acting as though it can't change the law. It can. It is already illegal for someone to visit a terrorist hotspot or to support a terrorist organisation, and this would extend to anyone who wanted to bring those people back to Australia through the back door.
The point being here, I suppose, Emily, is that no one knows whether the women in question are supporters of terrorist organisations or not, do they?
No, well, in fact, if you'd heard Tony Burke speaking on Insiders on the weekend, he was saying that there's been some fairly thorough and long-standing surveillance of the women involved, and that there is nothing that would allow them to suggest that there's any concern from an intelligence perspective, apart from this one member of the cohort that apparently has got a temporary hold on their repatriation. So, you know, there's a lot of hardline posturing over this issue. You know, that sort of law that you were just talking about could affect charities such as Save the Children. Its CEO says that it's not facilitating repatriations of Australians from Syria, but it's that kind of thing where if you were working in a sort of an aid mentality or a charity base, you would be in trouble. And there's also this idea that Jonathan Dunham's raised as the immigration spokesperson in Shadow, the suggestion that minors travelling with their mothers should be subject to temporary exclusion orders as well, and that would prevent them from returning to Australia. So, you know, this is... you know, the Albanese government's already saying, it's insisting that it's not doing anything more than it's legally has to do to facilitate the return to Australia. And that means issuing passports. You know, there's the exclusion order that's already affecting one of them. And, you know, the claims that he has discretion to refuse a passport to an Australian citizen, you know, I think Bridget McKenzie was making that claim last week. You know, Burke's pointed out that that can only be on the advice of an intelligence official.
Yeah. Contrary to what most people think, that's not right, actually, is it? Australian citizens, as a right of citizenship, have a right to a passport, and the government can't say, no, you can't have one, unless there's some serious security advice that you shouldn't.
Exactly, and then it would be, you know, there would be some legal concerns over that as well that would have to be investigated. So there's not, you know, they're taking a very hard line, actually. What they're saying is seems to be what they're following through on. So these calls for more draconian measures are just not helpful, particularly if they're not constitutional.
Mark Butler says Labor's just following the law.
This looks like a bit of a grab for a headline more than a serious policy. I mean, all we've seen is newspaper articles about it and about what appear to be some plans to try and criminalise the work of aid organisations like Save the Children. We're focused instead on applying the strict letter of the law.
And as you mentioned, the Prime Minister also raised the fact that the proposed law may well be unconstitutional anyway.
They pretend that the Constitution doesn't exist. They know that there are some limits on what can be done, but I repeat, our position is we are not repatriating people and we're not providing assistance.
The odd thing is, Emily, what do you think? The odd thing is that people were repatriated under the Morrison government. It's just that the political climate seems to have changed, not the facts on the ground.
Yeah, we've definitely shifted so much further to the right, and I think it doesn't help the fact that the Liberal Party and the Coalition at the moment is trying to kind of gather itself around, you know, separating out voters from One Nation. And, you know, everyone is being pulled to the right by this this idea that, you know, the two-party system is breaking down and we've got more challenge from the fringes. It doesn't mean, obviously, that we should be trying to step outside the letter of the law to do that. So, it's not...
No, you mentioned the Save the Children Fund. This is the CEO, Matt Tinkler.
It's a proposal without any legislative detail at the moment. So based on what I've heard in the comments today, it's kind of hard to read, right? In the one breath, people are talking about criminalising the conduct of organisations that engage in supporting people to repatriate. In the other breath, they're sort of saying, well, not Save the Children or not charities. That's not who our target is.
Yep. All right. To matters trade, and the Trump tariffs are in the news again. The US President Donald Trump in the aftermath of the Supreme Court decision, which found his earlier imposition of tariffs on many countries was illegal. He now says he'll try and raise a temporary tariff to 15% on US imports from all countries. Except that can't stay in for long. Beef is one of Australia's top exports to the US. That does look as though that might get an exemption. But Nationals leader David Littleproud says he's not so worried about beef, but that the new tariffs could well impact other industries which affect his constituents.
We export other agricultural products, and while beef will probably get a free pass because of their domestic circumstance, there'll be other products, and we've already seen it with steel and aluminium outside agriculture as well. So this is where we've got to get back to a rules-based order. Tariffs don't work.
Yes, well, there's one rules-based order that seems to be ordering the rules in Washington, Emily. It's that chaos rules, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you don't have to wait terribly long for there to be another strange issue to surface in relations with America, but you don't also have to wait very long necessarily for that issue to change or to go away. So it's just more of a roller coaster. It's Don Farrell's over there at the moment. This isn't obviously in response to these tariffs. He was there to promote Australian tourism for another event. But this is the president's sort of petulant response to the Supreme Court having struck down his action on tariffs. It's confirmed that they need to be considered by Congress. So he's raised them from 10 to 15 now in the space of 24 hours. It's hard to see, though, how he's going to win this one because, you know, without some kind of constitutional crisis, of course. But he can only impose this 15% tariff for 150 days before it has to be voted on. And there's no love for tariffs in Congress, really, even among the Republicans.
And the midterms are coming. So you're not going to get Congress people, voting for this ahead of the midterms because these tariffs aren't that popular anyway.
No, that's right, exactly. But, I mean, we're going to have a State of the Union address. I think it's in the next 24 hours. It's Wednesday our time. And there's bound to be lots of references to big, beautiful tariffs. So if you want to play State of the Union bingo, there'll be lots of cheers, I'm sure, but they will be, there's just not a lot of love for this. They already know how much it's doing, damaging the economy.
No, so the tariff policy is basically over. In all fairness, too, I think to us, Emily, it doesn't really affect us that much, does it? Beef will get, as David Littleproud said, beef will get a free pass. They need hamburgers there, they don't want to make hamburgers more expensive. And otherwise, Australia's exports to the US. I'm not trying to be rude to any small clothing manufacturer or whatever who's exporting to the US, but there's a chance, I suppose, that they could get their money back.
Well, yeah. I mean, the problem with it is, as always, it's just more uncertainty. You know, it's another 3 months of sitting around wondering whether this is going to, there's going to be some additional legal challenge and the thing that keeps being, the point that keeps being made about tariffs is, they get put on, they get taken off, they get they get ramped up and all these kinds of things. And there's just not much clarity for anyone who is running any kind of import-export business on what actually is going to be coming down the pipeline. So it's it would be nice to have a little bit more clarity. It would be nice if the law were actually being observed.
Yeah, see, and here's a point too. I mean, if you decided to buy, I don't know, a Toyota Yaris or something, I don't know if they export those to the States, but anyway, for the purposes of the argument, and you had to pay 10 grand more for the car because of the additional tariff, but now the tariff's illegal, so it has to be reimbursed. Now, the importer will say, well, it has to be reimbursed to me, but the consumer will say, no, I paid the 10 grand. I want the money. So it's going to cause a lot of discontent, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's going to tie up. I mean, the only people who are doing well out of this is the legal system, really.
Yes.
But it does make you wonder when that kind of crisis of some kind of constitutional order does happen, or if they just basically fold and you see Trump coming in line.
Emily Barrett's with us, managing editor of the Saturday paper, leading the Nightlife News Breakdown. Here's some good news. The bulk billing numbers are up. Some cost of living measures in the Albanese government seem to be taking effect. Bulk billing rates across the country have risen by 4% in the period from November to January. Health Minister Mark Butler is happy.
The early start has been even more encouraging than I had hoped. So we're well ahead of schedule, but we've got more to do in some markets where bulk billing rates are still pretty stubbornly low.
Yeah, how do we read this one, Emily?
Yeah, we all remember from the election campaign that slogan, all you need is your Medicare card, I think it was, not your credit card. So, you know, this was the $8.5 billion investment in Medicare. It was the single biggest investment since the program was created 40 years ago. It's basically what Labor was trying to do with this was to reverse what had become a fairly alarming decline in bulk billing over the first term of its government. And it's taken a couple of steps, but it does seem to be now on track. Because I think that initially the incentives for clinics applied only to concession card holders and to children. That only really succeeded in stabilizing the declines. So now they apply to all patients and there are extra incentives for clinics that bulk bill all of their patients. So that means that bulk billing rates have now increased. I think they're above 80% now, so it needs to be 90% by 2030. But it's been sort of a patchy progress because while there's been, as you mentioned, there's been increase over these last 3 months, the improvement's been pretty uneven around the country. There's some states and territories have been much slower. There's, I think Butler was pointing out that the ACT is just over 50%. That's one of the worst performers. In WA, it's 73.5. So, you know, the fact that they have to now find new ways. Butler says that in the ACT, they're looking to try and fund new bulk billing practices. But, you know, you've got Perth and the Hunter Valley and Newcastle all still below the national average. And they just need to find new ways to stimulate competition. So you have to, you know, watch and see what they are able to roll out.
Mm. Yes, indeed. All right. Emily, thanks for joining us. Always appreciate it.
Thanks for being here. Thanks so much.
Emily Barrett, Managing Editor of the Saturday Paper.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.